Good evening and welcome to Eco Radio KC. I'm Mike Murphy. On tonight's program, Richard Mabian, Maurice Copeland, and Mark Murphy discuss what's going on at that gas station at 31st and Cleveland, the latest updates on that. Also, Maurice is going to stick around and we're going to talk a little bit about the latest on the Bannister Federal Complex. There's a few updates there we want to make sure our listeners know about. And then somewhere in the middle, we're going to play a piece from a filmmaker who made yet another film about nuclear waste stored right in landfills, right in the middle of St. Louis. We'll hear all that coming up. But first, this news. The Mid-America Regional Council's Sky Alert has posted that tomorrow is an orange ozone alert day. This means active children and adults and people with respiratory disease such as asthma should limit prolonged outdoor exertion. When an ozone alert is issued via the Skycast, an unhealthy concentration of ozone pollution is predicted for the following day. So, things to protect your health and reduce pollution, cut back on or reschedule strenuous outdoor activities, drive less, combine errands and put off less necessary trips for a cooler day, carpool or use public transit. Avoid fueling during your day because the fumes escape and tiny drips and spills occur, and these gas vapors react with the heat and sunlight to form the ozone. So they ask people not to gas or mow their lawns before 7 p.m. tomorrow night. And then the buses are half price. And the Kansas City Star is reporting an ordinary looking lump of stone chipped out of a cliff on the grounds of Park University turned to be anything but. Inside was a glimpse of what this part of the world looked like 306 million years and more than three mass extinctions ago, when this part of the world was a tidal swamp. The stone held an exquisitely preserved fossil of a plant genus and species that were previously unknown to science. The so-called seed fern has clearly discernible pollen organs at the end of its fronds. This brush-like plant is of a time before there were mammals, before there were dinosaurs, before there were even flowering plants. It grew when this part of what we now call North America was the edge of the supercontinent called Pangaea. And we'll hear more about that, I think. And the Missouri, we're going to talk about this a little later too, but the Missouri Department of Natural Resources issued a final contingent hazardous waste permit modification for the Bannister Federal Complex, which includes an approved contingent remedy for approximately 225 acres of the complex that are anticipated to be transferred to a private developer. The site is currently owned by the U.S. Department of Energy, National Nuclear Security Administration, and the GSA. Since moving their operations to new locations, the Department of Energy and GSA have selected a private developer to explore redeveloping 225 acres of area of the complex west of the Union Pacific Railroad tracks, plus 2 acres off-site of the main complex. Please be aware that any parties adversely affected or aggrieved by the department's decision to issue the final contingent Part 1 permit modification or specific conditions of the final contingent Part 1 permit modification may be entitled to pursue an appeal before the Administrative Hearing Commission by filing a written petition by August 14, 2017, as more fully described on page 9 of the final contingent Part 1 permit modification. The final contingent Part 1 permit modification and supporting documents are available on the department's website, and again, that's the dnr.mo.gov or Eco Radio KC's Facebook page. I'm trusting that Natural E has put that up there. The Guardian reports that images captured by an underwater robot on Saturday show massive deposits believed to be melted nuclear fuel covering the floor of a damaged reactor at Japan's destroyed Fukushima nuclear plant. Locating and analyzing the fuel debris and damage in each of the plant's three wrecked reactors is crucial for decommissioning the plant. The search for melted fuel in the other two reactors has so far been unsuccessful because of damage and extremely high radiation levels. During this week's probe, cameras mounted on the robot showed extensive damage caused by the core meltdown, with fuel debris mixed with broken reactor parts, suggesting the difficult challenges ahead in the decades-long decommissioning of the plant. And that's it for our news. Thank you to Natural Leaf for putting that together. At this point, I'd like to bring in Mr. Richard Mabian.
Thanks, Mike. Good evening, everyone. This is, you got me two times in a row. I mean, this is starting to be a pleasure for me to have a chance to be able to come in here and talk to you, especially during the times that we're facing right now. I just want to say that since I was here last week, I have experienced what I would like to think was some very difficult weather. I remember being here last week and telling everybody to make sure that these ozone concerns they had coming up last week, that you took the time to reach out to check in on your elderly. You know, I'm talking about those that are good, hardworking, retired folks that got so much pride they don't want people to know they're doing bad. We know where they are. Check on them. Take them some water. Put some water in your freezer and carry them over a thing of water. We need to be very conscious of the fact that we have people living in some very hard times. I cannot imagine what we've been through in the last week. I was in an environmental climate change dialogue at K-State Saturday. We got there, it started at 8 o'clock in the morning, four of us drove up from Kansas City up there, we all had parts on the program, and when we came out of the building at 4 o'clock to head back home, everyone's thermometers or whatever they had to give them the temperature up in Manhattan said it was 106 degrees.
Mm.
One of the young ladies who was driving, like the most of the young folks do, they wear them little things on their arm to tell them how many steps they make per day, and they also gives you the temperature and all that other information. She flipped hers up, and it said 106 degrees. We had to run the car with the air conditioning on, because the car, it had to get cool, with the windows down before we could get in the car. Unbelievable. There was one little spot. We're in a parking lot, so you don't have a lot of trees. And there was one little spot with some trees, and I considered going over there, and I realized it didn't matter. The you could feel the intensity of the heat all around you. Last night, of course, I'm living a portion of Kansas City, Kansas that needs to have that infrastructure study. In fact, I'm going to tell the folks out there who have lost their electricity this summer that I want to have a show on infrastructure. And I want to bring in somebody from some of our infrastructure places. I got some buddies over there at Burns and McDonald's. I won't mess with the utility companies because they get defensive maybe. And I don't want to put them in a position where people will be wanting to ask some crazy questions. But I want to bring in some engineers and talk to them about the extent of the infrastructure work that is needed in our metropolitan areas. We've been out four times in my neighborhood this summer. I mean, from the horrific storms coming through right now, because I didn't get back in my house until 12 o'clock last night, so I haven't had a chance to really do anything. It was too hot to work. And, you know, and I had a neighbor talk about he was sleeping in his car, turning it on and off because he had air conditioning in it. We didn't have no heat. I mean, no electricity. I mean, that's unreal. And so you start realizing that maybe we need to have this conversation. My neighbor asked me, was it like this when I was growing up? And it was a great question. And I'm 71 years old. So I'm speaking from that generation. And I had to tell her that I don't remember us having air conditioners in the first part of my life. And she said, well, did you ever experience it like this? And I had to stop and think, no. You know, we had trees. I remember going down in the woods, you know, playing around creeks. I mean, they had things that you did that you didn't have this intensity of heat that we're receiving now. So having that guy on last week, I know I'm running my mouth, but I wanted to cover some things before we got started because I thought it was important. I don't know how many of you listened to the show last week. We had Dr. Guy McPherson on here, and he was talking about a perspective of the effects of climate change. If you haven't heard it, I suggest you go to our website. I want to thank all the people who downloaded that this week. I mean, it was unbelievable how many people went in to hear his particular perspective. Now, I'm not saying everybody agreed with him, but I think in the work that we do and the world we live in, everyone's perspective should be heard. So give yourself a treat if you haven't heard it, and go in and listen to his comments. We had him on here last week. That'd be Eco Radio from 6 to 7 on KKAFI.org. And just go to the archives and listen to it. You'll be very interesting to hear the things he's got to say, whether you agree with it or not. But I wanted to bring those things out because I don't want us to overlook the fact that we're going through what I like to refer to as a transitional period. Now, I got that said, and I'm going to come to this program tonight. I have long been saying, and you all haven't heard it, but Mike Murphy's had to hear it because he's the production manager. I have this thing about us spending so much time tripping on Trump. Well, we got some real serious things going on out here in our community environmentally. I'm talking about the environmental community. If everybody else want to do it, fine. But we got people that are suffering in many, many different ways. And I thought like, that it should be necessary for us to start giving some attention to those areas. Tonight's program is about one of those areas. While I've had people marching around, and I'm not saying this from a negative perspective, so please don't get your feelings hurt. I'm trying to make a comparison. While we've had people joining forces and walking around on the plaza in a rainstorm to protest certain kind of circumstances that's going on in this country, we got a portion of town here in Kansas City, Missouri, that's suffering a real serious gas leak circumstance. And I don't hear anybody saying anything about that. I don't see nobody walking down the streets with signs in their hand. I don't see anybody standing there except the people who live there. They own their own. And so this is an update. We've talked about it before. So this program tonight's an update. I'm going to open up the lines. If anyone out there has something they'd like to ask about it, contribute to it, or get off your chest, long as you stay within what I consider to be reasonable bounds, I want you to dial in. The number is 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. Now, this is how I want to start the story. I have with me, first I have my old road dog, y'all, Maurice, so y'all be careful out there. Him and I in the same rooms. A lot of places they don't allow that. Or they'll have armed guards standing by the door so they can usher one of us out of here. Not that we go at each other. It's just that we come into you with some stuff. So, you know, it's kind of powerful, a lot of energy in here. So, Maurice, say hello to folks.
Hello, everyone. Hello, I'm here.
And I have another guy here, and I'll have him explain more about it in a second. His name is Mark Murphy. Mark, you want to say hello?
How's everyone doing this evening?
All right, very good. Now, here's how I want to start. Maurice, give us a summary of what we're dealing with. What are we talking about?
Well, the reason I'm here is you offered the people from the area of 31st and Cleveland and the gas leak, offered them a chance to inform people of what's going on. That is the only reason that I'm here. As far as what I know of the situation, I don't know. I have knowledge of what's going on, but I do not want to speak. I want the people to speak. I offered people to come here, and hopefully they would have been here. Call in to speak for themselves. I'm an advocate, but I'm tired of talking for people. And I'm not going to say anything about the gas leak other than initially when I heard about this problem, there was so much representation that came out to represent these people. and the problem. Since that day, 2 days, they had two meetings. One up at the church on, across from Central Junior High School, and one down the street on 30th and Cleveland. I forget the name of that church.
It's on Linwood. And well, no, it's on, what is that? I guess it would be
30th and Cleveland, yeah. And at that meeting was Chris Koster and Emmanuel Cleaver. Emmanuel Cleaver walked the block. Chris Koster walked the block. And they seemed to be pretty upset at the gasoline smell and what the people were going through. Haven't seen them since. So those are the people that I feel that should be voicing what is going on, what they've done, what they're gonna do to help these people. Now, that's all that I'm gonna say.
Okay, so I'll ask the question. The problem is, and then I'm coming to you, okay, Mark?
Okay.
But I'm sticking here with you for a second. Then when I go to you, Mark, I want you to explain it from the neighborhood, okay?
Okay.
We have a situation with a gas station, correct?
Right.
They remodeled themselves, correct?
No.
And in the process of doing that, they took a tank out of the ground, right?
Yeah.
Okay, folks, those of you who are not aware of it, the tanks that have been in the ground in the years that's gone by were metal.
The tanks, yeah.
And those tanks, after years there, some would rust and some would create various cracks and create leaks. Now, understand, when they removed the tank, it wasn't because of the leak. When they removed the tank, it's because they were rebuilding. And people now, when they build filling stations, are using that plastic kind of tanks, the kinds right. that don't get old after 100 years and rust and crack and leak.
Right.
So they did their part. They got the tank out, they rebuilt the station, and they are rolling in dough. But then, as time we go by, it started to be a very strong odor of gas permeating throughout the neighborhoods. So what has been assumed is that while that gas was leaking into the ground, it got into the groundswell and ended up moving through that particular portion of town. So that's what we're dealing with, for those who hadn't heard this before. And so now we're going to talk about the circumstances of what people are dealing with since that became a factor. You heard Maurice said about the time they brought in our elected officials and their reaction to it and their follow-up to it. So, Mark, now you our neighborhood guy. We had some other people that Maurice thought was going to be here. They didn't make it. So the three of us, or the two of you, or you now, Mark, are going to pull this off. Tell people what happened. Before you start, I'm going to give out that number one more time. 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. Okay, Mark, enlighten us.
Yeah. This has been going on for a long time.
Just moving here for a minute.
Yeah, this has been going on for a long time. I noticed it back in, 2013. And you could smell gas coming up out of the ground. You still can. They even put solid metal caps on the manholes.
Mm.
They took the ones that had holes in them out.
Okay, let's put some names on they. They who?
The city.
City.
Yeah.
Okay. And what year did they rehab the filling station?
This was back in, I want to say, prior to 2014.
Okay. All right.
And they had a guy that took the takes out.
Okay.
And come to find out, he wasn't bonded. But the state okayed him to do it.
That's a separate story. Go ahead.
But this has been happening, like I said, for a long time.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are sick. There's a gentleman down the street from me. He has benzene in his blood. He's on dialysis.
Okay, so this is the issue we're dealing with. Now people are starting to have illnesses.
Absolutely.
In an area like cancers and respiratory problems.
Absolutely.
You just mentioned benzene. And so when that started happening, some of the relatives got concerned how did all this happen? I heard something, I think somewhere I heard it today that someone, I think that might have came from you, Mike. I'm not for sure, but the person, children ended up with some kind of cancer, and they never lived in the area where that particular incident happened.
That's the what we got out of the atomic home front. We'll hear about that a little.
But I'm just saying. So that was kind of what was happening. The people. The relatives is what I would see were concerned about. How did my mama end up with something like that, or my dad? So come on with that.
My neighbor across the street had several deaths in their family. He had to move his mother out the house, and you know they've been gone for a couple of years. So he's had to pay for housing for his mother and all that because he can't live in the house.
He can't live in the house. So when an official has been approached. I heard Maurice talk about the two that have a thorn in his side. But when officials have been approached, what's happened?
Well, the officials came, like Maurice said. They came that day, did the photo op, left. And
yeah, but we got deeper than that. Let's talk about the state. I wanted to get down to the state because that's
the state.
Whose problem is it?
In my opinion, the state
is environmental the one. Agency.
That's where the buck stops.
Okay.
Yeah, I pulled up the Pitch article from that came out a couple weeks ago. The title of it is "Heavy Gas Fumes Caused by a Gas Station's Petroleum Leak at 31st in Cleveland Draws Lawsuit from Missouri Attorney General." So, for a couple points to make from this, first of all, it's the very first sentence says, going back all the way to 2006, people who live near inner city oil have complained of a heavy stench. So, another point I just wanted to zip through here is, in January, the Missouri Department of Natural Resources confirmed that the problem was caused by petroleum tanks from the gas station leaking into the neighborhood sewer system and declared the area a hazardous substance emergency. Missouri Department of Natural Resources instructed Zill LLC, who's the company that owns the gas station, to take immediate action. The company submitted a plan to do so, which was approved in March. But since then, Zill hasn't followed through on its promises. This has caused, and again, this is as of several weeks ago, this has caused the Department of Natural Resources to conduct air testing, replace sewer lines, and pay for residents to stay in hotels. And yesterday, and this is, well, we'll just say last month, Missouri Attorney General Chris Koster filed suit against Zill, seeking to compel the company to follow through on its agreed to emergency response plans.
Okay, now what was that company?
Zill, Z-I-L-L.
Z-I-L-L. So who are they? That's the oil company?
Yeah,
that's the owner of the gas station.
That's the owner of the gas station.
So that's where I'm trying to go.
Yeah.
So there, the confusion is who is ultimately responsible.
Okay. Well, first of all, let me clarify something. The state is only saying that the people on the east side of Cleveland. That's where the contamination is. Okay. Nowhere else.
All right.
Okay.
All right. So what does that mean?
That means that everybody on the east side, they're denying. Oh, there's nothing
everybody
there.
Everybody on the west side.
On the west side, I'm sorry. On the west side. Which is crazy.
See, that's where I'm trying to tie down the debate. I mean, each time we come in here, we talk about this. It's not our first time. We've even had talked with Brandon Ellington, Representative Ellington, on the phone. We talked about it. So we have a pretty good knowledge of what we're dealing with.
Right.
And I was able to eliminate EPA. They eliminate themselves. Because they release their responsibility once the deal has been set. They claim that the organization that's responsible is the state.
Right.
That's who comes in and has the meeting.
Right.
The state comes in and holds the meeting.
Right.
The state is the one that's probably saying that the problem is on the east side of the street and not the west side. Okay. That's creating a debate. What I'm concerned about, okay, it's not on the west side, but it's on the east side. So what are they doing with the folks on the east side?
Right.
And now I will say something because I do want to mention this.
I knew you couldn't say it without.
I want to mention this since you brought it up. Brandon Ellington did a fantastic job.
Yes, he did.
He did a fantastic job of coming in and aiding these people and trying to have an engagement with the officials that initially, and I'm going to put it this way, started the mess. And when I say started the mess, I mean they pointed out to these people that they are the ones pointed out to these people that they had a problem.
Right.
You know, they said that they were, Emmanuel Cleaver said he was scared to walk down the street and light a match.
And light a match. Okay.
He said this. He said this on, you know, how can you do that and then leave the people? Now, another thing. They did a diagram of where the tanks were.
Right.
Okay? And the tanks were behind the gas station, and the tanks were 14 feet down.
Right. They
drew that diagram. I'm sorry, I'm no geologist, but that gas station is built up on a high hill.
Absolutely.
And 14 foot down is about almost window level with the homes behind it.
Right.
So if this thing is leaking, this is a surface leak to these people. This is surface saturation to these people down that hill.
That's why you can smell it so strong.
Yeah. So, you know, to put it that this contamination only went to the west, to the east, it's crazy because this was all on the surface. And when it rained, when it snowed, or when it did anything, everybody was getting that stuff.
I'm not going to litigate it. Yeah. But what I want to do is inform the public. That's what we're doing.
Right.
I'm making them aware of the fact that this is going on, and no one besides us sitting here talking about it. And from time to time, the picture, one of the papers, will bring up some story.
Well,
so what I want to know is what is it that you would like to see happen?
What I like to see happen is for them to take responsibility. People are dying in this area.
Them who?
Well, the state is the one that is orchestrating everything.
Okay.
I mean, they're the ones that were, they had tankers across the street from my house. My house is the closest to the gas station.
Okay.
My house is the closest to the gas station. They had tankers across the street from my house, which is behind the gas station, pumping fluid out of there all day long, all half the night.
Pumping it out of the ground.
Several times over the past 3 or 4 years. And they said across the street from my house, tanker and pump fluid out of there all day, half the night.
Okay.
They had 17 wells across the street from my house where they had.
I'm feeling you, and this is something that I think we as people are going to have to come to a point of figuring out how we're going to survive. We can't continue to depend on or expect those particular agencies to come in to deal with us. Yes, we need someone that is actively engaged in dealing with them for what they didn't do, just like they're doing up in Flint. But at the same time, we as people got to start trying to figure out how to help the people living in those communities survive. If we got those kind of conditions, we need to start researching, Mr. Copeland. What can we do to help our children that have to walk through there going back and forth to school? What do we have to do to help our elderly that have to live in and exist in those neighborhoods? I mean, what is it that we can do legally as a body of people that is practical?
Well,
okay, you understand what I'm saying?
Well, I want to say this. I've tried to contact numerous agencies that can maybe come in and help us. I've gotten no response.
Yeah.
So I'm to the point now where I am going outside. I'm trying to find the lawyers who dealt with the Flint issue. I'm sending emails to all the people, anybody that can help us. Roland Martin.
Keep that to yourself. Keep that to yourself, because you don't want to put all your business out there in the street. But here's where I'm at. And I want it to be understood, and we're going to have to break on this in a second because we got two more things to do on the show. In what I do, and I think I'm very good at what I do, I receive very little attention or response when I'm reaching out to try to get something done. So I'm working on a new way of us dealing with stuff by finding ways for those agencies that can do stuff to pick up the circumstances that we're involved in.
Right.
So that's something that we may have to talk about. Like I said, I don't want to put all of my cards out here on the air, but we have to come together. We got to get anger out of us. See, they want us to be angry, because when you're angry, it cuts your flow of creative thought. We have the intelligence around us now. We have people in positions around us now. We may have to reach into the attorney general's office. We may have to not go to him asking him what he could do. We might have to go to him with a set program that we would like to see happen. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
In other words, we got to meet them where we got to meet them. And we're sharp enough now. We can't depend. It's obvious that we can't depend on certain key people.
Right.
But if we do what we need to do, those certain key people are in a position where they're obligated to do something. Okay.
Right.
That's how they came to the meeting. A lot of what's going on out here, what this young man has been able to do, has been putting people in positions where they had to do it. They didn't want to do it, but they had to do it. And I'm saying we got to take those examples and bring them back into the neighborhood. You being here is a very good sign. Because, see, that's the biggest problem we got. You have us out there. They look at us as they're outside agitators.
Right.
If Richard Mabian comes over there in your neighborhood on 31st in Cleveland and standing out there with a sign talking about, unjust treatment, they're going to label me as an outside agitator. And they're going to say, that boy's from Kansas. What is he doing over here doing that? Mm-hmm. But when you start getting individuals that live within the neighborhood that are coming together as people and looking for ways that they can make things happen, that's where it happens, brother. So I'm going to say that to you, and I'm glad I got a chance to meet you.
Same here.
I think we should come together and sit around, not just here on the air, but somewhere we can sit around some coffee and kick it and just look into what's happening out here. I'm an environmentalist, so I mean, this is an environmental problem. I'm making a plea to the environmental community that's sitting here listening on this phone, right, on this air right now.
Right.
Yeah. I'm saying that we got a circumstance going on in town. It's low-income people, folks.
Yeah.
Understand? Yeah. It's low-income folks. So the resources that should be there to do what needs to be done doesn't exist.
Right.
So I'm coming to you saying, reach out to us. Help us. Help me figure out something that we can recommend to the folks who live there. We got a guy sitting here that lives in the neighborhood across the street from the place. So I'm saying we need to be able to start providing those people with something that's going to help you out, sir.
Absolutely.
Really nice meeting you.
Nice brother. Meeting you, too.
Yes, sir, and I'm going to have you back. I'm going to go ahead and call this to an end. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be back with the second part of the show. Thank you.
Before we do that, I just want to mention one other thing. Actually, we're getting a caller now, so maybe we should put this caller on the air.
Yeah.
So
let me get it. Caller, you on the air. Will you tell me your first name and the part of the city you're from, please?
Shawnee.
Yes, sir.
Why don't you hire an attorney to go after whoever's liable and go on a contingency? The people wouldn't have to pay it. The attorney would collect the money from those that are liable. I'm curious if you checked that out yet.
Yes, sir. Hold on.
Let me give you a quick answer. This is Maurice Copeland. I attended some of these meetings over in the area, the initial meetings, where attorneys were all over the place. In fact, the attorneys, they weren't soliciting, but they've been there. Not only have they been there, the attorneys, two of the largest law firms and the most successful law firms in Kansas City was there. And I'm not going to mention their names.
Thank you.
But, yes, sir, why do these attorneys come in and then back down?
If there's money in it, they're looking at one thing: how much money can they, through the law, get? And of course, they'll be looking to take a piece of it. But apparently, they're looking at it, and if they have interest, if they see that there's dollars out there and that somebody's got pockets they can recover from, then they will generally take it and sue. And then, of course, you're going to take a piece of it. But then again, they distribute some of it to the people who've been harmed. But I guess if they're not taking it, I don't know.
Well, the
status. Or they decided to take the case, or they decided to walk away from it.
No, I appreciate your call, sir, and I'm going to finish answering, and I'll talk to Eric. Keep listening to us and keep calling in like that. I appreciate it. And I think you are saying exactly where I was headed. Yes, we got profiteers. Always remember, we got profiteers. They remember back in the days of civil rights days, we had poverty pimps. We have them. And what I'm saying, we have to transcend them. And that's what you're talking about. You're talking about going to the one that is going to financially see a reason for getting involved. This is something that I'm trying to instill in the low-income community. It's all about money, sir. It's not about parties. It's not about affiliations. It's about money. And like you said, if in fact those kind of circumstances exist, we need to be able to find those caliber of persons. And I know exactly the kind you're talking about. I don't know them personally, but process wise, I know exactly the kind of person you're talking about that will come in and get involved because of the benefit is going to be to them. And then the process of them benefiting from it, they're going to benefit these people that are living in that community. So thank you, sir, for calling in. All right, I'm going to go ahead and take that break. I really appreciate this call. We'll be back with updates from time to time.
All right, so here's what we're going to do next. Last Thursday, Maurice Copeland and myself and a bunch of other people, a full room, attended a screening of a movie called Atomic Homefront. And it's about yet another movie about nuclear waste being dumped in the St. Louis and the adverse health effects that is causing. So it was a powerful movie. We got to see the movie. And then the filmmaker spoke afterwards, along with a mom who lost her son at the age of 16 to cancer. And they think it's tied to this nuclear waste in St. Louis. So we're going to hear just a clip of some of the discussion that ensued after the showing of the film. And you're going to hear Ann Solentrop moderating.
So do you want to start, Rebecca, as to how you came about to make the film?
Well, I'm not from Missouri at all, and I was told about this story from actually a geologist that I knew. And he mentioned, I asked him, well, what's going on in the United States that no one really knows about? Just from the science side. And he told me the story, and I just thought it was unbelievable. I thought he was making it up. And then as he went on with more details and more details, I realized this wasn't, it wasn't just a tale. It was something that needed to be investigated. And the third day, we came and didn't really know anything and just came to try and understand, begin to understand who the people were that were trying to find out information. We were meeting people, and someone connected us to Kristen. And this was on the second day of filming. And Kristen and her son were so generous with their time, considering what was happening to them, and said, you have to come see us, but we're out in Kansas City. And that was the second day of filming. So when we got to Kansas City and filmed and saw what was going on, it was just, you saw the scene of them together. So it was shocking. The whole crew was, we were all on the plane going back to New York crying, very upset. But sometimes you follow a story and it takes longer than 2 days to really get hit with something that just makes you go, okay, we're on this and we're not stopping. And that was due to your generosity. And Jonas's. Remember when we came in and the first thing Jonas said was, you know, he grilled me about who I was and if I made a film before and did I do anything he may have heard of. This is one smart kid. And then he turned to me, I remember, I said, listen, Jonas, okay, we just came out here, but you don't have to do it. You know, if you're tired or you're not in the mood, we'll just leave. And he said, and he just turned to me and he just said very simply, do you think it'll help? Remember that? Do you remember when he said that? Do you think it'll help? And I said, I do, and I hope so. And he goes, okay, let's do it. You know, he was unbelievable. I don't know, what a person. So.
Yeah, there's nothing else. At that stage, there's nothing else that he could do. We were trapped in a position that we were fighting for his life, and that's all that we could do, turn it over to people who would make awareness for us. And I'm so grateful to you. I'm so grateful to you and to the Just Moms group and to the Coldwater Creek folks. It's been really difficult, I think, for them to map all of that out and to prove that people are getting sick from the landfill and getting sick from the creek. And when I found out about what was happening, Jonas had been hospitalized for some time, for several months. In fact, I want to think we were almost a year into it when I found out. And I was in the hospital that day, and I remember very vividly finding out about it and thinking, this is crazy. And I went to the Facebook site, and here were all of my high school friends that had cancer, that were having children with cancer, that had conjoined twins, that were just unusual appendix cancers. One of my friend's 13-year-old daughters was diagnosed with thyroid cancer. Why would a 13-year-old have thyroid cancer? Her family didn't have history of that. And right, and my son had Ewing sarcoma. His cancer was between the brain and the sinuses, so it was inoperable. And I don't know if you could tell in the hospital bed, he had 87 stitches in his head where they had just removed a large portion of a tumor. There at the end trying to stop it, and it kept growing. But in the hospital that day when I found out, I met three other moms from the North County area there with children. And I sent them a message, the Coldwater Creek women. I said, how can you map this when half of us have moved away and our kids are out here having cancer and in different states having cancer? The government wouldn't count those. They're only counting the people who are living there by the creek. I think it was Anne, I don't know where you are right now, Anne had explained to me that when women are born, you have as many eggs in you as you're going to have for your whole life. And so, Anne, standing right next to me, this is how entrenched I am in thought, I'm sorry. And so, the more I think about it, the more I understand that had living there had that effect on my eggs. And so that, you know. Not all of them, obviously. My beautiful daughter's here today, I have to say. This is my daughter, Brett. Say, wave your hand. So, I'm sorry, I'll keep talking if I don't give this away.
And so,
Michael Parenti.
Business leaders showed an increasingly class-conscious concern for the drift of things in the mid-70s. That's a very quite conscious and explicit awareness of their class interests, speaking in explicit class terms here. Not to the public, they don't say that when they come on the air, but when they talk to each other, it's remarkable what they say.
Alternative Radio, Wednesday, 9 a.m.
After the Harvest, a nonprofit volunteer hunger relief organization is looking for volunteers to help pick fruits and vegetables to feed people in need. Call 816-921-1903 or go to our website, aftertheharvestkc.org, for more information. This message, a public service of 90.1 KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Okay, we're back, and that was a compelling piece we heard from the folks involved in the film Atomic Homefront about St. Louis. Interesting. We're going to go back to this side of the Missouri, talk about the Missouri Department of Natural Resources issuing that final permit modification for Bannister Federal Complex. And this was done on July 14th. And it's a final contingent hazardous waste permit modification for the Bannister Federal Complex, which is at Bannister and Troost, which includes an improved contingent remedy for approximately 225 acres of the complex that are anticipated to be transferred to a private developer. For decades, the Bannister Federal Complex has been used as a warehouse space to manufacture electrical, mechanical, plastic, and other non-nuclear components of nuclear weapons. By the way, I'm reading this from the Department of Natural Resources official press release. So I will just add in there, while they say non-nuclear, it has been known that uranium has been found on the grounds there. So let me see if I have to click on that other link to find that. There is, or maybe I'll just go back to the email I was reading earlier that Natural Lead put together. Any parties adversely affected or aggrieved by the department's decision to issue the final contingent Part 1 permit modification or specific conditions of the final contingent Part 1 permit modification may be entitled to pursue an appeal before the Administrative Hearing Commission by filing a written petition by August 14th, 2017. And then it says, as more fully described on page 9 of the final contingent, so you'll have to check that out yourself. You can look at the Missouri Department of Natural Resources website. It's dnr.mo.gov. And I haven't checked, but Natural E says it should be on Eco Radio KC's Facebook page at that time. So do we know what is meant by pursue an appeal before the Administrative Hearing Commission? And what is meant by filing a written petition? Is that a formal way of doing that, or do you know?
That's a formal way of holding up the process so that whatever grievance or contentions we have, that we could air those contentions further. And what we have, and I'm saying we as the former workers, the sick workers, and also the general public, it's a safety issue that the demolition of that plant and the what they call decontamination of the plant is not going to be, and we can prove that it's not a real thing, because they're not going to remediate that plant, that ground. Mm. They've told us that all throughout the public comments, and people ought to get a hold of those public comments, and you can get them through the Missouri Division of Natural Resources. Go to their website, and you can get a copy of that if you like, or read it if you like, because they did not answer all of our questions at the public on the replies for those public comments, which is very novel. And also, there were three public comment meetings, and we only got copies from two public comment meetings. I guess they're calling this one in August a public comment meeting, so that's why we didn't get a copy of it. They're going to call this last one in August, which
no,
I didn't.
I don't think it's actually I don't think it's going to happen if no one files to appeal.
Oh, to appeal.
Yeah,
okay,
that's
good.
The way I read it.
Good, so, because that's the way I understood it first. They had done three public comment meetings, one which I didn't know about. And so they had already fulfilled their requirements of the public comment meetings.
Right, right. So someone will have to appeal this in order for to kick out this
hearing.
Will,
right. And it will be appealed.
That happened to us over in Kansas with the certainties when we had that hexavalent chromium problem, and they had a public hearing, but in order for them to have the public hearing, some resident had to request it or appeal it or whatever, the decision, and that's where Eleanor Jefferson did that. And then when she did that, they were able to schedule a hearing, and they brought in all the fiberglass companies from around the country to come in for that particular meeting. My thing is this, is there's a lot of areas of consideration in this whole process. And I'm very serious about the direction that we go. There is a provision that deals with brownfield. You know, I'm involved and engaged in this brownfield health stuff right now from around nationally. And one of the things is that you create a training program to educate and train the people who are most affected by the product, by the chemical spills.
We're really, really short on time, okay, so we want to at least give Maurice a chance to mention this whistleblower thing.
Okay.
All right. I'm sorry.
And that's kind of leading into that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, well, you know, everything that's been going on that we've contended, finally, an attorney that worked for the Department of Labor has come out, and he is a whistleblower. And our contention was that this process of the claims process, which goes through the EEOICPA, you can look it up, EEOICPA, and see what it says, see what it means. That's the claims process for the sick workers. Attorney has come out and said the same thing that has been said for years, and it all boils down to deny them, deny until they die. And he is claiming that that is exactly what was going on, and that is contrived by the officials at the NIOSH. Wow. NIOSH, that's the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health.
So this is just the tip of the iceberg. Stay tuned. We're going to hear a lot more about
Stay tuned,
this.
Baby. Yeah. And it's going to come directly to Kansas City.
All right. I'm sorry to rush through this, but we've... our time is so quick. So a couple of events coming up. Cultivate Kansas City is having its homegrown happy hour on Wednesday from 5 to 7:30. And it's at 5424 Maston Street in Merriam, Kansas. And it's in a unique forest space created in a sustainable environment. It was planted in 2011. And all natural, no spraying, no weeding or mowing. Again, that's Cultivate Kansas City. Also, the Sierra Club's having the People's Hearing for Clean Air and Water. That's happening on Thursday, July 27th, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And that's at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City, Missouri Library. And it's sponsored by the Sierra Club Missouri Chapter and Moms Clean Air Force. I don't know about anything about them. We should look them up. And also, August 1st, the Missouri Boat Ride, Department of Conservation Boat Ride, and that just about does it. Also, they're looking for people to take a bus, E350KC, taking a bus up to Nebraska for pipeline protests on August 6th. Find out more about that at 350KC.org.
California counties sue oil and gas giants. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report about water. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Energy Transfer Partners, the company that is operating the controversial Dakota Access Pipeline in North Dakota, is now facing an investigation by federal regulators over violations at another project.
The Associated Press reports that the company's Rover Pipeline, partly in Ohio, has wrecked wetlands, flooded farm fields, and destroyed an historic farmhouse.
In a preliminary finding, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission determined that the company and its subsidiary did not disclose all relevant information about its new pipeline, which runs for more than 700 miles from Pennsylvania through Ohio and Michigan into Canada.
The feds ordered the company to clean up and restore 6 acres of wetlands and remove diesel fuel from quarries.
The federal authorities have also banned the company from drilling under waterways to build the pipeline until it explains how the spills occurred.
In addition to the federal violations, the Ohio Environmental Protection Agency has issued 10 notices to the company for things such as spilling several million gallons of drilling mud laced with chemicals into wetlands. The state is seeking almost $1 million in funds. fines.
Craig Butler, director of Ohio's Environmental Protection Agency, told Midwest Energy News that as soon as the company started building the pipeline, they began having problems because they were moving too quickly trying to meet a deadline and cutting corners.
A lawyer for some farmers in Ohio told Inside Climate News that the company just goes and does things and asks for forgiveness later. He added that the company was basically telling landowners to get out of the way.
Large monsoon thunderstorms are bringing more extreme wind and rain to parts of Arizona than they did in the past, according to a new study.
The research published in the Journal of Applied Meteorology and Climatology shows that while there are fewer large storms than there used to be, they bring heavier rain and stronger winds than storms 60 years ago.
Dust storms, flash flooding, microbursts, and wind pose the immediate dangers. The affected areas of the Grand Canyon State do not include the swimming hole where recently 10 people were killed by a flash flood near Payson, Arizona.
But the Phoenix metropolis and the Colorado River Valley, along with low deserts, are seeing storms of more intensity.
One of the study's authors, Christopher Castro, told Science Daily that the less frequent but more intense storms are consistent with expectations due to climate change.
Another study done by researchers in Australia shows that as storm patterns fluctuate due to climate change, waterfront areas once thought to be safe are likely to be hammered and damaged as never before.
The study looked at a superstorm that hit Australia's east coast in June of 2016. While it was of only modest intensity, it struck from the east, which was highly unusual. The storm was so destructive that it shifted the coast an average of 25 yards inland.
The storm washed away millions of tons of sand from beaches across a 125-mile stretch of Australia's eastern seaboard.
One of the study's scientists told Science Daily that we will be facing storms coming from directions that do not follow old patterns and may be many times more devastating to shorelines and coastal buildings.
The study shows that climate change is not only leading to sea level rise, but also making coastlines previously thought to be safe much more vulnerable.
Fossil fuel companies are being sued by different groups based upon claims that they knew the damage their products were causing to the planet, but continued production while hiding scientific evidence.
Two county governments in the San Francisco Bay Area sued 37 oil and gas and coal companies last week for failing to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions.
Marin and San Mateo counties and the Southern California city of Imperial Beach are claiming that the companies are responsible for things such as frequent flooding, beach erosion, as well as the possibility that water will eventually inundate roads, airports, sewage treatment plants, and other real estate.
SF Gate reports that the suits claim that Chevron, BP, Arch Coal, and Shell, among others, knew about the damage their actions were causing, denied it, and sought to discredit scientific findings that greenhouse gas emissions were heating the Earth's atmosphere.
Also named in the suits are the American Petroleum Institute and the Western States Petroleum Association.
In related news, a group of current and former employees of ExxonMobil are suing the company for endangering the value of their retirement accounts. They allege that the company damaged them by fraudulently inflating its stock and misrepresenting what it knew about the risks of climate change to its business.
The employees and retirees say that the executives in charge of the company retirement plan knew it was committing fraud and should have avoided investing in the company's own stock.
And finally this week, hundreds of thousands have flocked to French beaches recently, but we're not talking tourists.
Rather, it's an invasion of mysterious yellow clumps that, according to Live Science, look like sponges or unappetizing hunks of butterscotch mousse, or even possibly the biggest balls of earwax ever.
Officials say the mystery balls washing up on French beaches along the English Channel aren't dangerous and might be from building materials made from polyurethane. methane.
Some testing indicates that the clumps could be paraffin wax, which comes from oil shale or coal, and is used in food products, crayons, and candles, and most likely came from passing ships.
An environmental group spokesperson who was brave enough to pick up one of the wet things said that they easily break apart and that while the globs may not be toxic, wildlife could be harmed if too much is ingested.
It's not the first time the Play-Doh-like infestation has occurred. In fact, it's the third time within a year. The first spongy things were pink. The next ones were white.
So, if you're going to a French beach this summer, take your swimsuit, your sunscreen, and your camera, because you might just run into glob sponge pants. This Week in Water is supported by the American Water Works Association. Discuss your water infrastructure challenges and solutions at WIC 17, October 30th through November 2nd. Find out more at awwa.org/8.